even if you stay for a long time, it's still temporary.
No more? Okay. Okay. So now, therefore, he's making the point that unless you come in contact with Paramatma, you're not going to be liberated. Right? Because Brahman means you understand the potencies. Right? We understand the potencies connected with a person. So that person is Paramatma. Right? Then you can be freed from the material contamination. Otherwise, then the impersonalist will understand the Brahman platform, but it doesn't remove their desire to control and enjoy the material nature. Does this make some sense? Right? So in other words, they're going to be engaged in this so-called cultivation of knowledge, but they're not going to be able to free themselves from actually from material contamination. Because getting impersonal liberation is not actually freed from the material world. Right? Because the material world is the place where one is in illusion. Right? So just as we see the demons can be in the spiritual world and be in illusion, so why can't you be in the Brahman and be in illusion? Right? It's a lesser place. So if you think I'm the controller and enjoyer, that I am God, you're in illusion, so you're still in the material world. So you actually were never liberated. Maybe in position, you're taking in a place outside the material energy, but you're still under the influence of illusion. Does that make sense? So one can say, because it's not localized. The point is material consciousness is a platform of illusory existence. So it can be anywhere. Because as we were discussing before, is that there's the one chit potency. Then how samvit, sandini, and ladini apply upon it, either upon the internal or the external aspect, then you get the internal pastimes or the transcendental pastimes, or you get the material pastimes. So you're dealing with one energy, it just happens to be in this part or that part of it. But it's still one person. You know what I'm saying? Whether something's sitting in my right hand or left hand, it's still the same person. Does that make sense? So technically, they're never, ever actually liberated. Liberation means you're freed from all aspects of material consciousness. That means you give up that I'm the controller and enjoyer. Then, as a servant of Krishna, then you can actually be freed from material nature. Therefore, unless you come to the understanding of Paramatma, right, that he's actually what's controlling everything, then you'll never get out of the material energy. Right? Because if he's not pleased, she's not going to be pleased. Therefore, as it mentions here, you do not get, do not receive the shelter of the spiritual Shakti unless they perform bhakti. Yes.
The not being the enjoyer part is pretty straightforward. The not being the controller part is sometimes misunderstood because people think that to be detached or aloof from things means you're not trying to be the controller. And if you have a take charge mentality, that means you want to be the controller. Can you explain the difference of what it means to actually not be the controller and not be the enjoyer and still function within this world of names and perform one's service? Because sometimes you think, oh, I'm not the controller, so whatever happens, that's what happens.
Yeah. Because the controller is that I am God. So then let us say you're in an experience, a particular situation. There's an experience there. So as we discussed before from the second canto, is what's happening is the energies are moving with, are interacting with each other. In other words, Krishna has created, done the primary creation. In this primary creation, all the aspects of the creation are already created, all right, in their blueprint form. So that means all the potencies are there. So whatever kind of sense you can have, whatever sense object is there, whatever interaction could be there between any combination of those senses and sense objects, that's already been created. So now the living entity, according to his desire, then comes in contact with those combinations of that energy, those energies. Then he thinks that I am controlling this interaction, and I am enjoying this interaction. Right? So, but actually, he's just able to observe it. But yet, because of identifying with it, because I am the controller, means the identity is false. Because that's in the place of sambandha. Right? I'm the enjoyer, that's in the spot of prayojana. So that means if my sambandha is correct and my prayojana is correct, my activities will be correct. And if both are wrong, my activities will be wrong. So if I think I am God, I am the enjoyer, my activities will be material. If I think I am servant, Krishna's pleasure is my goal, then my activities will be devotional. So it's not a matter of whether one specifically seemingly does something or not. It's what's this mentality. That's why Krishna says there's action and inaction, inaction and action. So this action and inaction means I do nothing that seemingly is material, but I'm fully absorbed. Because still, when I, let's say, eat something, then I think it's me as the enjoyer, you know, the controller of this prasad, and I am arranging it and eating it. Anything. Just that I'm being in a nice place. I don't get involved. I just go out for a nice walk. But it's still, I'm in the masculine position, and I'm trying to enjoy the energies of the Lord. When actually I'm independent of that, the masculine and feminine principles are themselves interacting with each other anyway. It's just a matter of what you want to watch. Right? It means on the television, you got, you know, a cable, there's hundreds of channels. They're all going on, whether you watch them or not. But what you watch, that's what you get credit or discredit for. Like that. So even if they don't connect themselves with the activities, still the mentality of I am the controller and the enjoyer, if that remains, one is still materialistically bound. It's not a matter of that I don't get involved. Like Prabhupada says, these yogis, they don't get involved. You know, people come with money and their hands go behind their back. You know, they don't get involved with money. Well, Prabhupada said, you know, people come with money, we put our hands out, we take it, because it's for Krishna. So that's inaction and action. You're doing an activity, but it's connected to Krishna. You know, I am servant, its goal is for Krishna. Therefore, the same activity becomes spiritual. Well, the other one, seemingly, it's done in detachment, but it's still material. Is that okay? Yeah. Okay, yes.
But it would be more constructive for us to appreciate that actually starting from the analysis first, that being a jiva, actually not prakriti, I mean being prakriti or being enjoyed, then this as my preliminary analysis, then I take as a secondary that I have this body or that body, because generally when we are attached to this body, this is the main element I am. So from there on, then the second stage will be, doesn't matter if I, because I may be in a female body acting as a male, mm-hmm. and vice versa. And even if you want the third gender and all these things, mm-hmm. but actually if the focus is in prakriti and purusha, then you may solve a lot of analogies.
Mm-hmm.
This is one question, but I was a little paying attention to the other aspect that you mentioned about Paramahansa Brahman. Because the absolute truth is known in three aspects, Brahman, Paramatman, and Bhagavan. If Brahman is eternal, it's constantly manifesting. So the soul, what is in the Brahman, why is not eternally enjoying there? Can you elaborate?
Why is not enjoying there?
No, why is actually, why if the Brahman is eternal?
Oh, why can't the jiva stay there eternally? Yeah, because actually the Brahman is the reflection, or not say the reflection, is the effulgence of Krishna's qualities. So the point is if those qualities aren't appreciated, how does one stay in that effulgence? You know, just like you have a person, and they are very, you know, their mood is very powerful and very attractive. So you can appreciate the environment that's created by that, but if you don't appreciate the person it's coming from, you can't remain in that environment. Does that make sense? So even though, because there's, it's illusion to think that there's such a thing as Brahman that has no qualities. Brahman is the effulgence of Krishna's qualities. So in this material world, then the universal form has entered everything because that's his qualities. Right? So he as a person hasn't entered. His energies have entered. And so the point is that Brahman platform is just appreciating the energy itself. So the impersonalist can't appreciate the variety of energy. They just know it's energy. So they'll take it in a neutral state, or in that, what do you call it? The shanta state, but not even a devotional shanta. Just appreciate Brahman. So, but they can, in other words, the real impersonalists can see that there is a variety, but it's all Brahman. Well, the Mayavadis will say it's all one, because they're technically not actually impersonalists. They're actually Buddhists. Like that. Because impersonalism means you'd have to support all the Vedic conclusion. The point is the impersonalist doesn't know all the aspects of the Veda, therefore they come to their conclusion. But if you show them farther beyond, they'll accept it. But the Mayavadis, they only accept that this is the only interpretation, there isn't anything else. So technically they have to actually negate parts of the Veda, which is what the Buddhists do. They don't do it as completely as the Buddhists, but they only do it partially. So for them, it's just all illusion. For an actual Brahmavadi, it's not illusion, it's Brahman. So that's why the Mayavadis are called Mayavadis, because they say there is this Maya. It's all Maya, it doesn't exist. While the Brahmavadis say it exists, but it's Brahman. And whether it has form or not, what do they care? They're appreciating the Brahmanness of it. So because of that, but they don't understand that the Brahmans come from a person. So they appreciate that there's this effulgence, but they don't know that the effulgence is coming from a person. Right? Does that make sense? Right? So that's the difference between Brahma-Bhuta and Mukti. Mukti, you're only appreciating that the effulgence is there. And that state of being absorbed on the Brahman platform, freed from any material contamination. Right? That means at least seeming material contamination. No gross. So they get great happiness from that, but it's still not the happiness of bhakti. Right? It means you perform sinful activities, you'll get some happiness from that. But if you perform pious, you'll get much more. So in the same way as if you're liberated, you're free from all material endeavors as such. So you're going to enjoy more than the pious person, but you're still, because of the material consciousness, you're not going to enjoy as much as the devotee would in the same platform. So Brahma-Bhuta means you're liberated, but you understand that this platform of liberation is Krishna. You understand the effulgence is Krishna. It's his qualities. Right? Then there's a person behind those qualities, that's Paramatma. So Paramatma is sanctioning the interaction of these energies that you want to take part in. They're all going on, you want to take part in it, Paramatma arranges that you come in contact with those energies interacting as you want. I want to see this or engage in that or experience that. Paramatma arranges through the modes of nature. He sanctions then the modes of nature carry it out, put you in the situation that you come in contact and those energies go, you are the conduit for those energies, so you experience it. Right? So then the devotee knows it's the person that's doing it. But it can be appreciated on its own. But you know it's Krishna, but the emphasis is on the experience. When the emphasis is on the person behind that experience, that's Paramatma. And then when it's the person that's beyond the material. That therefore they have made all this arrangement because of their relationship with us and their affection for us. That's Bhagavan. Does that make sense?
Yes. And in a practice, well, in action, when the jiva, because we are, since time immemorial, being Brahman, basically. Until this analysis of Krishna's effulgence, I mean, this interaction, because there is a complete ignorance about the personality of the Lord. No, mm-hmm. It's intellectual approach.
Mm-hmm.
But actually, in the practice, if I don't see others as such, I never will reach the platform of Paramatma.
Mm-hmm. Right? It means Vaishnava etiquette and those things. It means appreciating the qualities of devotees.
No, before stepping into the because constitutionally everybody is a Vaishnava, let's
mm-hmm.
say.
But mm-hmm.
let's say, that's why I say in action, right? When, because one leaves Brahman platform when they start to act.
Mm-hmm.
The Brahman doesn't need to act, right? According to
means, yes, but the devotee can act within that. Means, in other words, he has that understanding, but he's still acting. So, in other words, you're performing the activities of prescribed duties, but your mentality or your consciousness may be on the level of Brahman.
Okay.
Right? Just like we were pointing out here, Bhaktivinoda, of course, making the point. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, actually, that point was made by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. He's saying that there's 64 items of devotional service. Those 64 items are what is to be done within sadhana bhakti. Now, whether you apply that through vaidhi or for rag, that's depending upon the individual, but not that the 64 is vaidhi or the 64 is rag. No, that is devotional service. That's sadhana bhakti. Then that can be done in this mentality or that mentality. So in the same way is that there are the activities that a living entity engages in while within the material sphere. Right, there's action because the jiva must be active. So now accordingly, if he does appropriate activity for his mentality and his, you know, his position, now that can be done on the material platform, the Brahman platform, the Paramatma platform, the Bhagavan platform. So he could do it on any of those. But the action would look the same. Like that. So even though, let's say, like Yudhishthira, he's a king. So the activities of a king, he's doing it on the Bhagavan platform. But let's say the residents of Dwarka, they're doing it on the Paramatma platform. Right? And then you have others who are doing it on the, like Sukadeva, who is that aspect of the Brahman platform. Right? And then you have other people who do it on the material platform. They're just pious people. Like that. Then you have people who are they're performing the duty. The duty itself is pious, but their mentality is impious or sinful, like Karna or Duryodhana. So therefore, materially, as far as their duty goes, they get a good result. The kingdom runs smoothly, but as far as their personal development, they don't get a good result because their mentality is actually demoniac. But it's the same activity. All these different kings are all doing the same activity and getting the same good result. But the difference is ultimately, personally, one goes back to Godhead. You know, one, you know, understands Paramatma, you know, and then the demigods go back to the heavenly planets, like that. And so everybody goes to their position.
But can you elaborate this aspect of getting the same result?
No,
in what sense they are getting the same result?
Same result means the action and reaction of the prescribed duty gets the same result. Means Yudhishthira Maharaj performs his duty as a king and he gets the good result of a nicely run kingdom. Duryodhana does the same thing. He has a very nicely run kingdom. So in that way you can say by the prescribed duty they're getting the same material result. But the point is we're doing these activities not for the material result but for the transcendental result. We're trying to please the Lord. So the devotee does those things in connection with Krishna. That's actually what the material world's for. But if people don't understand that, then at least they can follow the same form because that's the form of devotional service. But because they're not interested in devotional service, therefore you call it by all these other names and all that. Does that make sense? They call it by all these. So therefore you call it, you know, pious or impious or, you know, yoga or, you know, so many different names are given to the elements of devotional service that are supposed to be engaged in the Lord's service. But if you engage in the Lord's service, we just call it devotional service. But if you don't engage it in the Lord's service, then it's got all these different names. Like that. Does that make sense? Like that. Like that. So I seem to have a backlog here. Something okay.
Maharaj, the desire to be the controller and enjoyer of peace, it's the most subtle contamination.
It's the most, yeah, it appears to be, and it is.
Okay. Does that contamination exist as some form of bodily covering for the living entity?
Does that exist as a bodily covering? It does, but its origin is not that. It means the origin is the consciousness. From the consciousness, then comes the particular specific desires of the mind. Well, that was textbook. Okay. And becomes the particular desires of the mind. That then creates the gross body. So Prabhupada says is that when the doctor is not the body, it's the soul. The body could be anything. You know, it's now a doctor. It could be an engineer, you know. But the soul thinks I am a doctor, so it's the soul who's the doctor. Like that. So, but in actual, that's an illusion because he's not the doctor. But the soul is the one who thinks he's the doctor. The body doesn't think I'm the doctor. Right? The body doesn't think I'm the body. Right? The body just exists. The soul thinks I'm this body and I'm this position and situation and all that. So that mentality of I'm the controller and enjoyer then permeates everything within material existence. From the, you know, the karmi, the jnani, the yogi, all of them. Right? They're all stuck in this material world. Oh, it's one of these ones. Some of those ones where they call you and try to get you to return the call because they don't want to spend the money. But it's a wrong number, so they don't know why you don't call them back. Like that. Okay. Does that make any sense? So that's the whole idea, is that the soul, by nature, is neutral. Right? Its inherent nature is to have love for Krishna. But it one starts in the neutral state, because love is voluntary. Right? So now, if you take up that voluntary mood, because you either love or don't love, that means there's not an in-between. So if you take up that affection for Krishna, you move in that direction. So then you become under the protection of the internal potency and take up that association and come to that platform. If you don't take up that love, you remain in the neutral position, then as the soul has to be active and has to taste rasa, he will move in the direction of the material and therefore come under the control of the material energy and therefore be brought into the material world. Does that make sense? So the whole thing is that when we want to experience something not in connection with Krishna, that's material consciousness. That's the controller enjoyer. So it's not what you're doing that makes you the enjoyer, the controller and enjoyer. The sense, what makes you is your consciousness. Is, as we pointed out, is your duty, let's say, is to do a particular activity. You're, let's say, a parent. And so you have a duty to take care of the child. So included in that will be the proper interaction with the child, the proper support to the child. So therefore, when the child, if it's appropriate, you're in, let's say, a home environment, the child, you know, is happy to see you, comes running up to you, you know, to give you, to embrace you and stuff like that, then your duty is to reciprocate that. Now, those energies of what you're going to feel, that energy going through you of what you feel in seeing the child running towards you and the experience of the child, what they're experiencing, that's just the energies of the universal form of parent and child meeting each other. Right? Now, you perform the duty properly, they will meet properly and they will flow properly as long as you keep your ego out of it. It's just, this is what you're supposed to do. as soon as your ego comes into it, then you cramp that flow to some degree. And depending on how bad the ego is, to that degree it becomes, obstructed. You don't act without it according to the duty. It flows freely. Now, the question is, one, now you've removed that ego. But the point is even that aspect is there, but still, the subtlest aspect, are you the controller and enjoyer of this? Because you wanted to be in this environment. So therefore, so now you consider I'm the controller. Now I've created this environment. Or Krishna has arranged this environment. And this experience that you're feeling, are you the enjoyer of it? Or are you simply the instrument in allowing these energies of Krishna to contact each other and interact with each other? Then you're your assistant. You're not the enjoyer. But you will experience them as if you were. Right? But as soon as you claim proprietorship, then you're in Maya. So the thing is that you can experience whatever there's need to be experienced within the realm of your prescribed duties, but you can't claim to be the controller and enjoyer. And you'll get the exact same. In fact, you get a better experience. But there's this thing, if it's mine, then it's better, because then I can control it, I'm secure, I can get out of it what I want, when I want, how I want. But that's not true, because Paramatma is making these arrangements through the material energy, according to your karma, by what you deserve and don't deserve, by what you've done in the past. Does that make sense? So that's the whole platform, is that if you can understand I am simply servant, all those things can be experienced. So this idea is that, oh, that's Maya, or the parents are interacting with their kids, that's Maya. That's not Maya. The Maya is what do they think about it? If they think it's mine, then they're in Maya. If they think this is my prescribed duty, this is my quota, according to Ishopanishad. And so because it's my quota, therefore this is the aspect of which I can, interact with Krishna on this level that I am, have this consciousness of, this particular aspect of the interaction between family members. So that interaction, that's my quota. And so I can experience that, I cannot think that I am the cause of it, or I am the enjoyer of it. So in that consciousness, you are liberated, because there isn't a material consciousness. So that means the grihastha is liberated. But the impersonalist who thinks it's all Maya, it's all illusion, even though he's not involved in it, he's still in Maya. Because he thinks, I am the controller and enjoyer. So I don't get involved in this kind of controlling and enjoying. My controlling and enjoying is being God. But he's still in illusion. So this is a subtle point. That's why it's so important to perform prescribed duties, right, in a proper way. Because then others who don't see in this way then can understand you're doing the right thing or wrong thing. Because actually, how do you tell if someone's doing the right or wrong thing? Because right means it's connected to Krishna, wrong means it's not. So if one doesn't see everything in connection to Krishna, then what gross things he does see, he tries to connect that to Krishna. So therefore, I'm attached to family, therefore I get married, I have a family. Right? So everyone will say, okay, that's appropriate in Krishna consciousness. So he's being Krishna conscious by getting married. But what is this consciousness in seeing and interacting with this family? That they can't understand. So you may be very, it's just like, it would be a personal joke between Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, right? Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur would address Bhaktivinoda Thakur as Vishayi or Stri Sangi, right? You're gross materialist, because he had his wife, and I think he had 12 kids, right? But, here's two, Nitya Siddhas, having a good time. Because, they don't see anything like that. But this is the situation he's in, so they can harass about that. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And Bhaktivinoda Guru would say, you are simply a renounced. You forgot to dedicate instead of renounce.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. But Maharaj, I really, you summarize, I guess, the essential of what is actually the finer point of where devotional service starts, pure devotional service. Until we reach there, because we may be reaching that just right now for a speck of time, you know, that is very easily achieved. The element of challenge is to take it 24 hours, this process. Is,
yes.
Actually, it's not 24, it's 24/7, 365, right? This
yes, process. And you keep going, you know, times 100.
Times, so. But then, if that difficulty is there, we know then, okay, we can kind of feel why it is also called, although the two stages of bhava and then the most closer to prema, let's say, different, one is called raganuga bhakti and the other is sadhana raganuga.
Vaidhi. Oh, raganuga is also Bhaktivinoda explaining it's sadhana.
Correct.
Technically, even bhava bhakti is sadhana. So you have prema bhakti and you have sadhana bhakti. Then a sadhana bhakti, you have bhava bhakti, and then you have the 64 items. Within the 64 items, then you have raganuga and vaidhi.
So this is the only way that we can become, not actually the only way, it's the scientific way to become 24.
Yes, yes. Because what we do is, what we're discussing here is that functioning on the platform of this actual gyan that we're being given, means this devotional gyan, where by that proper knowledge we're not an illusion because we see things as they are. It's not the path of gyan, because the path of gyan means you live a certain lifestyle, like these Varanasi, Brahmavadi sannyasis. But it's the understanding of gyan. That's the thing of buddhi yoga. Means you perform the activities of karma with the understanding, proper the Vaishnava understanding of gyan. So you're performing Vaishnava activities of karma, in other words, service to Krishna, with the Vaishnava understanding of knowledge, like that. With the proper, also, Vaishnava understanding of remembering Krishna, like that. With the whole idea is that you're trying to bring it to bhakti. That's the meaning of the... from what I understand, the iti in Anyavi Lashita Shunyam is that it's without, means, in other words, what devotional service is without any material qualities whatsoever, you know, and, you know, the iti, that which is in pursuance of that. That's important because means is that it must be understood that only pure unalloyed devotional service is pure unalloyed devotional service, is bhakti. Anything less than that is not. But what's in pursuance of that, then you're given basically the same standing, the same credit. So those who are on that platform give the credit of those who are pursuing that platform, they consider them devotees. So the Nitya Siddhas consider anybody engaged in that kind of pursuit as devotees, even though technically speaking they're not. They're aspiring devotees, right? So for that reason then, because our consciousness is gross, we tend to start with the externals of perform your duties. You know, but even that, then you have to be able to distinguish between what's sinful and what's pious, and that how the service is favorable for Krishna. Because the point is, whether it's sinful or pious, it must be favorable to Krishna. Right, so the pious activities then within, so there are those that are recommended for service to Krishna within the pious. So within also the impious, there would also be natural recommendations. In other words, if you're taking the position that pious means that it's according to the Veda, impious means it's not according to the Veda. So then you get your Vedic and you get your modern. So the recommended activities within the Vedic that are more naturally directly connected to devotional service as given by the Bhagavat or the Pancharatrik systems, then those would always be the recommended activities, you know, either directly those activities or those activities in support of that. You know, like taking a bath to do puja. Bath itself is not, inherently, you know, devotional. But it's something very supportive of the devotion of worshiping the deity. So then all those are taken. So in other words, what's directly favorable, what is supportive, and even up to what's neutral. But anything that is not favorable to our particular mentality as Gaudiya Vaishnavas, even though it may be bona fide as a devotional activity in other sampradayas or even as a pious activity, those we avoid. So in the same way as then the impious activities, which are defined as not Vedic. In other words, those impious activities that actually, if they were understood according to the Vedic knowledge, would be favorable in Krishna's service, those can be used or yukta vairagya into Krishna's service. Right? So it's just as in the Vedic, there's a discrimination about what is favorable and not favorable. Even if it's not Vedic, it's still there would be what's favorable and not favorable. You can't just say, because it's Western, it can all be connected, but the Vedic, oh, and then we're very specific. Because the non-Vedic is simply a perverted reflection of the Vedic, that's all. Because there isn't such a thing as something that's not connected to Krishna. It doesn't exist. So the concept of modern actually is a figment of people's imagination. But we acknowledge that figment and then say that, okay, within that illusion, then you take that illusion that actually looks the closest to what's the Vedic and then engage that. Does that make sense? So then the yukta vairagya actually becomes scientific. Otherwise, it'll just be emotional according to one's own conditioning and one's own likes and dislikes. So it actually has nothing to do really with devotional service. The aropya bhakti there, or the imposing, you know, bhakti onto something because of your own intention becomes so strong that one can even doubt or be hard to find the devotional content. That make sense? That makes sense to everybody else, or was that kind of language that made some sense? Okay. Yes.
I heard the explanation of the Anyabhilashita Shunyam verse that material enjoyment is, that's not allowed. That cannot be there. But karma and jnana, they can be there, but they're not allowed to cover the bhakti. Mm-hmm. So can we say that this is for the reason of like yukta vairagya, that because you can utilize karma and jnana in bhakti, is that why that explanation is given, or the verse can be interpreted in such a way? Or
I would say is that it's best to take it a step further in understanding, then it'll make sense. Because how do you define sense gratification? Sense gratification doesn't mean the senses coming in contact with the sense object, because that's all we do. Because Rishikesha, Rishikena, Sevanam, Bhakti, Ruchate is the whole process is engaging our senses in the service of the Lord of the senses. That's what rasa means. So sense gratification actually doesn't mean that there's not activities with the senses. It means that we see that experience of the senses and sense objects separate from Krishna. That's sense gratification. Otherwise, we just call it engaging our senses in Krishna's service. Like that. It's called devotion. We'll call it devotional service. So it means that you're not seeing a connection. Now, the karma and jnana then means that there'll be practical, there'll be the knowledge of the shastra, and there'll be the activities of the shastra. But in the beginning, we may see those according to actually just piety. So that itself is still usable in Krishna's service, just like the senses are. But how do you say? Because the proper activities are there, but we may not be in a platform to see beyond those. Like that. So until one comes to, through the proper performance of the Vedic activities from the platform of Naishkarmya, then one actually becomes freed. You know, then one can see the senses engage and how it's not sense gratification. Right? So then all the technical things fall into place. The difficulty will come is that because for us, senses, contacting sense objects means sense gratification. Therefore, we call it sense gratification and throw it out. But what we're throwing out is actually the senses being engaged without Krishna involved. But how we interpret it is the senses don't contact the sense objects, which in the beginning is okay. Just like the brahmachari, the senses contact very little sense objects. By that, then they develop the proper qualities and knowledge by which then, if there is an inclination, they can get married. The senses can touch the sense objects, but they don't get overwhelmed. They can still see it in that same knowledge of Brahman as that he saw as a brahmachari, like that. So in the beginning, so that's good for pulling oneself out of the material endeavor. But the weakness is it becomes an obstacle for getting into spiritual endeavor. Because what happens is that instead of thinking it's the improper engagement of the senses, it's engagement of the senses. So then the concept of engaging the senses is thrown out. Then what happens is in the beginning that's okay because one only knows senses, you're engaged anyway. So those things you can do, you do, and those things you don't, you just have completely avoid. So that works for some time while it's new and it's fresh. Like that. But if at some point you don't connect it to Krishna, that newness and freshness stops. Because Krishna is Navayovana. So unless you're appreciating Krishna, you don't taste the freshness. And so it gets old. Because you don't see it. So it means in the beginning you're not seeing it in connection to Krishna, but you know this is the right thing to do. Right? This is what we do as devotees. But you don't technically see it in connection to Krishna. Then as we become practice, but it's new, so we're practicing it, we always have to think about it. So we're concentrating on the activities and all that. And there's no other desires, there's no ego. So therefore, we experience the freshness. But as we become proud of what we're doing, then Krishna doesn't like pride, so we're not actually taking part properly in his pastime. So we're not in contact with him. Then it becomes old and boring. So then, to find taste, we either have to improve our consciousness, right, and get into our own, or take the easy path, find everybody else's at fault, and get back into material, like that, the taste there. Then you'll taste that ever, because universal form's unlimited, so there's ever freshness of new material varieties that you can bump into. You know, but I mean, the taste of material gets boring, but you know, it's new boring, you know, like that. So then the difficulty comes is that if at that state we don't understand that it's the engagement of the senses in Krishna's service that makes it good, and not engaging is what makes it bad, then at that point our heart will become hard, and then actually becomes an obstacle to devotional service. Because then we're going to... Because in the beginning we're only worried about our own senses, but because we become practiced in that, we can control them, then we'll start going after everybody else's senses. And therefore we'll sit there and, oh, these gross guys, and this sense gratifier, and this one this, and that one that. But what's that got to do with us and our self-realization? It's got nothing to do with it. What are you doing about our heart? It's becoming harder and harder. So therefore then when you bring up the points of that senses and sense objects in Krishna's service, then we may or may not appreciate it. Because then we just get into manipulating material energy, into organizing things, managing things, efficiently getting things done, because we've cut out the senses, the sense objects. That means we've cut out emotions. That means the personal element is not an important thing. So it's just efficiently getting something done is all that we're left with. So now if we connect that to Krishna, we will make advancement. But the problem is until we address... this element, it's the actual point is, if it's connected to Krishna, it's good, and if it's not connected to Krishna, it's not good. That's the only judgment. Then we will have actual difficulty dealing with the Vaishnava social environment. right? Because we're not necessarily inherently pious, that that's what we grew up in. So socially, like these big impersonalists, they can deal very nicely on the social platform, but they all think it's all Maya. But they're nice enough to know that, you know, these low-grade, you know, undeveloped grihasthas, that's what they need, like children. So therefore, children, you don't tell them, hey, you're a stupid idiot kid, you know, get it together. You know, you just go, oh, hi, how are you today, and all that kind of stuff. So that's what they do with the grihasthas. So they seem very nice and everything like that, but they actually think that they're scum. But they know that that's socially how you deal, because they're just kids, they're idiots, right? But here in the Vaishnav, it's on a different platform. It's because it doesn't matter what your position, if you're connecting to Krishna, it doesn't matter. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, if I could have 100 kids and knew that I can make them all Krishna conscious, I'd do it. But I don't have faith I can, because the material energy is so weird, so I'm not going to have any. Like that. Yeah. Also an alternative to, you know, various social, modern social problems like that. But so that it's a very important element to address. So in other words, the gyan aspect on this level, this grosser level of gyan, is useful and actually important in the beginning. You know, like Sadhu Maharaj is pointing out, is these grosser elements are actually very important. The forms of devotional service, the 64 items, the knowledge that one has, they're very, very important, because we identify with the gross. But ultimately, it comes down to, is it connected to Krishna or not? Otherwise, even like in Nama Bas, you have Pratibimba and you have Chaya. Chaya means it's connected, Pratibimba means it's not. You know, like that. You can go to Guruvayur temple. When they take the elephant out on procession, like that, all they do the whole time is chant Hare Krishna. They don't do anything else for 3 hours. You know, of course, they chant their, you know, Hare Rama, part, you know, first. They use the Vedic one. But they're impersonalists. They're straight up front Mayavadis. This whole program that they do there is all established by Shankaracharya, right? So he's a great devotee. So he's establishing all these nice things for the deity. But they're just straight Mayavadis. So that's Pratibimba Nama Bash. They don't really get any spiritual benefit, because there's no connection. There's no chit potency. Right? The names are there. It's pious. They'll get piety from the Vedic, chanting the Vedic mantras, you know, in an authorized way. But they won't get any spiritual content. Does that make any sense? Yeah? You had something? Moved on from there? Yes.
Sometimes we find ourselves attracted to young women.
Okay.
Leslie, and that, who are just minding their own business, just walking by or being somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And this attraction is disturbing to us and to the women.
Mm-hmm.
And how can that be just sort of just go away?
How can that go away? I mean, you have a few options, but problem is we don't really have, we have about, how you say, 52 seconds here. Basically, if what we were saying before is that, well, I mean, one is that, is it your duty, is it your austerity to be involved with that young girl who just walked by, right? If it's not, then that's one aspect. So that's your grossest aspect. It's nothing to do with me. It's somebody else's austerity, not mine, right? You understand? Because the point is if you want it, you got to pay for it. You got to feed it. You got to buy it. You got to do the whole thing, right? So it's not your austerity, right? It's not your duty. So that's one level. The other level is, what are you going to get from it, right? Because unless you're dealing on the platform of duty, you're not going to come to the platform of Naishkarmya. But if you don't come to the platform of Naishkarmya, you're not going to get out. You're not going to advance in devotional service. You're not going to get out of the material world. You're not going to develop love for Krishna. And the other thing is that the point is they are a medium for one of Krishna's aspect of Krishna's energy, that aspect of beauty, right? So they're carrying that, right? And then you have, you know, senses that can perceive that or appreciate that, right? So all it is Krishna's potency of appreciating that and Krishna's potency of being that are contacting each other. So now if you think I'm the controller and enjoyer, then you'll try to enjoy this contact. If you're not, then it has nothing to do with you. You know, it's like the postman. He's given a letter, and he's given this. So it's nothing to do with you. Just the energy is moving. So the energy is moving. It's nothing to do with you, so there's nothing to enjoy here. Two, I have no duty or towards this girl, so therefore I don't get involved. So in this way, then you just keep walking, and they keep walking. Okay. And it also, I mean, that may, it also works on older girls also. Like that. Or, you know, Mahaprasad on it, that you're not supposed to eat on a fast day, or, you know, anything like that. It's the same principle. Okay. Yeah. Yes.
But it could work also effectively if one can shift for a moment that period of time, the momentum, to 50 years ahead.
Yeah, no, but I'm saying that renunciation is also done on the whole point of just knowing what's actually there. Then you also have the things of, if it's grossly more there, of just actually what it is you're getting attracted by. Because the medium for the beauty is actually still made out of, you know, mucus, bile, and air and all those things. You know, problem is, it's just, it's arranged nicely. It's what Bhakti John said, his famous quote, they were saying about some nice-looking girl went by, and one of the brahmacharis or that says, you know, yeah, but it's just, you know, stool and urine and, you know, all this kind of stuff. And Bhakti John says, yeah, but she's got all the stool in all the right places. So the point is, this is still what it is. So by contemplating actually what you're dealing with, then it also loses something. Because the whole point of interacting with it is not what you're going to get from it, because then you're the controller and the enjoyer. It's what are your duties towards it. So since you have no duties towards this, you don't get involved. You know what I'm saying? So all these other things are to contemplate, you know. So you have all these tools to work with, right? Your duties, the jnana aspect of, you know, what is there, what's the benefit, what's not the benefit, what you're actually dealing with, like that. Right, and then you have your Krishna consciousness, how that's connected to Krishna or not. You know what I'm saying? Because as soon as you understand, it's actually Krishna. So if that much attraction is there through dead matter, so it's dead matter, but it's Krishna's potency that makes it attractive. And Krishna says this is a spark of his splendor. This isn't even, you know, the full thing. Right? So that means is what. How attractive is Krishna? You know what I'm saying? So that way then it can all be connected. Is that okay? Okay. So we'll end here. Okay.
Om Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
Shri Prabhupada ki Jai. Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki Jai. Janyatai Gaura Premananda ki Jai.
Thank you.